This morning, this venue, this opportunity is a way for us to take a step back. You know, the idea of coming together for a Yarchi Kala, for a broad-based learning program, really gives us an opportunity, and it gives me an opportunity to look at, you could call, a bigger picture. And that's what I'd like to do together with you today, is to really think about our Yiddishkeit, our relationship with Hashem, our Judaism, from a step-back perspective, from the stance of a big picture. That's usually what I think about when I am invited to speak at the Nili Yarchi Kala. I want to think about what is a big issue, what's a big topic that we can talk about that is really fundamental to our understanding of Yiddishkeit, to our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'd like to do that today with you and focus on the question of why. Why are we learning together? Why are we choosing to lead inspired lives? Why do we observe halacha? Why are we doing this? I look around this virtual room and I see many people whom I know and recognize, many noshim tzidkanios, people who do so much good, so much chesed at Torah and ma'asim tovim and mitzvos, amazing, amazing. Do we ever take a step back and ask ourselves, why are we doing this? And the truth is that the stakes are very high for this question of why. Because unfortunately, as many of us who are together right now devoting our time for Limud HaTorah, there are many people, young people, in different parts of our community who are not interested, who have grown up with a Yiddishkeit that has not worked for them, that their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is broken to the point that they're not motivated to lean in, to learn, to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be active in their Yiddishkeit. And there are many, many reasons for that and aspects of that. And I don't know much of anything, and I certainly can't speak to any phenomena. But what I can say is that in discussing with different young people in our kollel orbit, I've heard certain things that were thought-provoking for me in terms of reflecting on what it is that we are communicating to our children and our community about why. Why are we doing all of these things? And that is a part of the issue that we need to think about to be able to communicate to future generations and to ourselves, why are we doing this? So one answer that you'll get when you ask certain people is that, why are we observant? Why do we follow halacha? Why are we doing the things that we do? Because that's how it is. That's how we do it. And in a certain sense, there is an element of truth that you could argue for this idea. There is a fascinating book, really fascinating book. It was published a few years ago by a woman, a professor of theology, a Catholic woman by the name of Dr. Maria Podgy Johnson. And she writes a book called Strangers and Neighbors about how her experience living in Scranton, Pennsylvania, on a block with frum families. So what does it look like to a Catholic mom observing her frummy neighbors? Like, could you imagine what that would look like to look at us from the outside? So she writes a fascinating book about this, and her book is about Judaism. It's really interesting. I highly recommend it. And she says that one of the explanations that she's given about the laws is, quote, to provide an occasion for obedience. Ideally, he says, she's writing about someone who explained to her about the reason for why we do what we do in halacha. I'm putting it on the screen if you could see it. If you have the source packets, it's on source number one. Ideally, he says, if a Jew sees someone eating bacon or lobster, he should think, that looks really good, but the Torah forbids me to eat it, so I won't because I am a Jew. He freely admits that if you've grown up kosher, the idea of eating pigs or crustaceans is just gross, but the principle holds nonetheless. If you look at it this way, keeping kosher is a spiritual discipline of roughly the same sort as the Lenten fast in Catholic tradition. During Lent, every time I think, oh, what I wouldn't give for a cup of tea, or a donut, or a glass of wine, or a lazy evening in front of the TV, or whatever it is that I have taken on as my fast that year, I am reminded that I don't, because, this is her words, the Son of God emptied himself for me, poured himself out, hungered and thirsted and suffered and died for me. And here I am, feeling sorry for myself, because I've got a no-caffeine headache, which is my own stupid fault for getting addicted to the stuff in the first place, and in any case, hardly stacks up against crucifixion. Or, for that matter, against what millions of my fellow creatures go through every day. I really need to get over myself. If I go through this thought process 5 or 6 times a day for 6 weeks in a year, maybe I will get over myself just a very little and draw a little nearer to God who has drawn near to me. So, by my colleague's account, keeping kosher is like a really serious year-round fast, demanding sustained attention and care and focus and a continual reaffirmation of what God has done and what it means for his people. That's one approach to Yiddishkeit. We do this because we do this and all the things that God did for us. And the truth is that one interpretation of this Medrash Rabbah that you see in front of you in Lech Lecha gets to this point. Says the pasuk in Tehillim, "Okel tomim darko imras Hashem." The statements of God, tzrufa, are refined. Mogenu l'chol achosim bo. Rav Amar, if you see where the cursor is on the screen, second line in the source, Rav says, "Lo nitnu hamitzvos." The mitzvos were not given, Ella only, letzaref b'emes habrios, to purify. Literally, letzaref comes from the smith's activity of the silversmith cleaning and purifying the silver from the dross. Here's the key line. V'chima ichpas leila HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Does God care? L'misha shochet min hatzavar. Whether you shecht an animal from the neck, which is where it's supposed to be shechted from, with the 5 laws of Shechita. Oh, sheyishcho shochet min ha'oreif. Or from the nape of the animal. Have lo nitnu ha'mitzvos. The only mitzvos are there. Ela letzaref b'emes abrios. Just to purify us. In a certain sense, another way to teach that is to say, for the purpose of inculcating obedience. And this is what the Rambam describes in the third chelek of the Moreh Nevuchim, that we do mitzvos because we learn obedience. We practice submissiveness. So this mahalach, for some people, this is their why. Why they do Judaism is because they have to. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said so. And even if the mitzvahs don't make any sense and they don't resonate, we have to do that because life is about obedience to God. So for some of you, and if this works for you, awesome. Ma tovu ma noim. The challenge is that even if that's true, to what extent does that resonate with people? In the year 2020, how do we experience that? How many people want to sign up for Yiddishkeit if that's what we're offering? And then I would just ask you, is that the totality of everything? Is that the full story? Or is that only part of the story? So maybe there's a second way of looking at this. Similar but different. Some of you are familiar with a psychological test, which is being featured on the screen right now. It's called the marshmallow test. You see on the screen a picture of a boy who is being observed by psychologists. And what do they tell these children who are in the marshmallow test? They tell them, Kinderlach, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you one marshmallow right here on the plate in front of you right now. But, you know what? If you wait a few minutes, however long they give them in the particular experiment, we're going to give you 2 marshmallows. And they do the same thing with cookies and lots of other things. And this is called the marshmallow test. It has become the source of a tremendous amount of psychological research and fascinating publications. There's a whole book about it. And what researchers have found is that children who have been able to delay gratification have had exponentially higher markers of success all across the different dimensions of their life. Social, emotional well-being, their aversion to taking drugs and getting into other substance abuse, overall happiness in life. So many key indicators of a good life are connected to the marshmallow test. Now, researchers are quick to point out that just because a kid doesn't succeed in the marshmallow test doesn't mean that they're doomed and condemned to a life of misery. We can teach this quality, but this idea is crucial for a healthy upbringing of a normal child in society. And you see on the screen, they observed with a secret camera what kids will do. Some of the kids, they're going to stare at the marshmallow. They're going to stare it down for the time. Other of them, they're like cringing, looking, staring, sitting on their hands, scratching their head. They'll do anything they can. And some of them give in and they eat the marshmallow. But maybe this is a different mahalach of understanding Yiddishkeit, of understanding the rules, of all of the do's and the don'ts, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the Torah, letov lach, leman yitav lach, that it should be good for us. How is it good for us? Because it is the ultimate marshmallow test. It teaches us self-control. There is a word that appears often in the Chumash and in Halacha. It appeared in yesterday's Parsha. When we battle Amalek, that force, that selfish drive. Moshe says to Yehoshua, Shmos Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Tes, Vayomer Moshe El Yehoshua, Bechar Lonu Anoshim, choose men, Vitzei Lachim Ba'amalek, go fight Amalek, Machar, tomorrow. Machar, tomorrow. Delayed gratification. That is a key element of Yadus. Think about the laws of Kashrus and Brachos and the concept of food. So, if I weren't Jewish and I was taking a road trip and I was driving from here to the East Coast, you know what I would do if I were hungry? First of all, I wouldn't have to pack 17 sandwiches and the leftover chulent and 4 kosher drinks that I wouldn't have to worry about. I wouldn't be driving with 3 suitcases full of food. I wouldn't take any food. I would just drive. And you know what would happen? No disrespect, I love Indiana, but the rest areas in Indiana are gefährlich. So I would drive straight through to Ohio, and I would pull off. Yaffa, you're nodding, I see. Rebbetzin, you know what I'm talking about. You've done this drive, Rebbetzin Lauterstein. I would pull off on one of those beautiful, circular, almost looks like a dish. Those beautiful rest areas in Ohio with the flags fluttering and the beautiful benches outside. I would pull into the drive right there next to all the rest of the goyim. I would walk inside. I would stand online at Sbarro's or Arby's or whatever there is. And I would not worry about whether I'm fleishig or milchig. I wouldn't have to think about when the last time I had a sandwich was. I wouldn't have to wait and figure out whether it's einu ben yomo or ben yomo, whether it's kosher or it's treif, and what bracha to make and how many kazesim are in the granola bar because it's a suffix bracha achrona on the bread. It's like you're driving yourself crazy. I would just get online, order food, and eat it. But no, we don't do that. We do not do that. Instead, we pack our cars full of food because what if the vending machine is empty? And then let's assume there's no Lifnei Iver. I'm going to get online at the Arby's. What are you ordering? Everybody ordered like 17 items. I'm just going to have a Coke, a little bit of ice, not too much ice because I want to get my money's worth of the soda. Just a little bit of ice and a Coke. That's all. They look at you like you're a meshugan gavain. You pull into the rest area. All you're getting is a Coke. Yeah, that's all. Then I go back in the car and I start unwrapping the tinfoil and I'm thinking to myself, first of all, did I wash? Okay, I got to go back inside, find a cup. Excuse me, I stand online. Can I get a cup? Sure, why do you need a cup? I need to wash in the restroom. There's no washing in the restroom. There is, but I have to wash with a cup because it's a kli. By the time I finish the washing and the figuring out if I'm fleishig or milchig and what bracha and the bracha achrona, it's like it's a whole rest stop just in figuring out the food. That's what it is. I can't just put something in my mouth. It's the ultimate marshmallow test. This is true in so many areas of halacha. We know there is a din, there's a fascinating din called orla. Orla means the first 3 years of a fruit, you're not allowed to eat it. The fourth year is what we call neta revai. And then the fifth year, you can eat the fruit. So why is that you can't eat the fruit? So says the Halakha of Orachaim HaKadosh, this appears, this din of orla, of not eating the first few years of the fruit. He says it's adjacent to another din. The pasuk tells us, "Lo tzochlu al hadam," do not eat on blood. What does it mean? Don't eat on blood. So this is what the Rambam calls alav shebechlolos, alav, a prohibition that includes many principles. So it includes not eating before davening, not eating before sprinkling the blood of a korban, waiting. Lo sochlu adam, says the Orachaim HaKadosh, samach hakosav mitzvah zu lemitzvas orla. The pasuk juxtaposes this mitzvah to the mitzvah of orla. Lirmos masha omru, what it says in the Medrash Talpios, fascinating. I don't know how many of you knew this. Ki adam arishon chata beitz hadas kodem zman hitiru shebechinas orla. Do you know, says the Orachaim HaKadosh, that there is a Medrash that says that Adam Arishon would have been allowed to eat from the Eitz Hadas. It would have been permitted. He could have eaten from the Eitz Hadas. Just, you know what the issue was? Adam Arishon was created on Friday on Erev Shabbos. And all he needed to do was to wait till Friday night, till Shabbos Kodesh. Just wait a few minutes. Just wait a few minutes. Says the Medrash, he didn't wait. That was the issue. She'im ha'yamamtin alel Shabbos Kodesh, if he would wait until Leil Shabbos, ha'yamekadesh al hayayin, he would have recited Kiddush on wine. We know that the Eitz Hadas was not an apple. Maybe it was grain. Maybe it was grapes, which we would have made into Kiddush. Vizo so divreim sha'amruzal adam moshech bar laso zuhi orlaso. This is the mitzvah of orla, of waiting till you eat the first fruits. Vuma sha'amar akasov samach le azharas va'araltem orlaso lo sochlu pirio mipri orla al hadam pirish al sibas hadam. Because you know, says the Orachaim HaKadosh, the reason for dam, for death in the world, the reason for our struggles, it's because Adam Rishon couldn't wait 5 minutes. And that's what the mitzvah of Orla, the mitzvah of Lo Sochol Al Adam, so many of the mitzvahs that we have, they're teaching us, you can have, you can enjoy, you just have to wait. This is what Rav Soloveitchik describes in his essay called Catharsis, when he talks about the practice of what we call Taras HaMishpacha, family purity. That a husband and a wife, they're permitted to be together to each other. That's an integral part of a healthy married life. But we have to wait. When a couple gets married, first they prepare, so they have to wait. Asar lono asar rusos, even after they're engaged, before they're together. And then once they're married, so there's a period of waiting, and then there's a period of togetherness, and then there's a period of waiting. And as frustrating and as annoying and sometimes painful as it is for a woman to report to her husband that she's in the state of nidam as an unexpected whatever, Suga Bashoshanim, Rav Soloveitchik quotes from a medrash, that all of a sudden the couple says, okay, we got to wait. We got to wait. And so now, it's true that maybe one approach to Yiddishkeit is that we do because we are told, and that's the discipline that is required of being servants of God. But now we understand, wait a second, this idea of discipline, of being girded by principles that don't shut us off from life, but give us barriers for waiting, it's the life of the marshmallow, which leads us to healthy, well-adjusted life, which is beautiful. And I think this is something that for many people can resonate and can really inspire them. But once again, how many people fail the marshmallow test? How many people aren't ready for that? How many people aren't excited about that? How many people can't see far beyond? It's a very sophisticated and mature test. Not so simple. Is that really what Yiddishkeit is all about? Is that what it's all about? That's the question that we're asking today. So maybe there's a third way of looking at this. And this is something that, when I was growing up, was a very popular way of looking at Yiddishkeit. And I suspect that for many of us, this is how we were raised. The Gemara tells us, Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Gimel, that the Umos Ha'olam, the nations of the world, are going to come before God in the time to come, and they're going to say, oh, we also want a portion of the world to come. Let us get in on it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say to them, I don't understand, says the Gemara. Amalem HaKadosh Baruch Hu here in Mar Makom number 5, source number 5. God says to them, Shotim Shebaolam, fools. Mi Shetarach Be'erev Shabbos. He who worked on Erev Shabbos, Yochal B'Shabbos. You cooked on Friday, you eat on Shabbos. Mi Shelo Tarach Be'erev Shabbos. The person who didn't prepare, who didn't cook on Erev Shabbos, Mehechan Yochal B'Shabbos. Where are they going to eat from tomorrow? We all know that deep down we are comprised of a neshama, not just a guf. And our neshama lives on in eternity as a spark of godliness, lenetzach netzachim, in the spiritual world to come, in Olam Haba. And so therefore, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Avos, in Pirkei Avos, that this world, Olam Hazeh, this world, Domeh Leprozdor, it's like a hallway. It's like a waiting room. Olam Haba, the next world, the world of the neshama, which exists right now, we just don't see it because we're in this world. But that next world, Domeh Letraklin, that's like the hall. Haskein Atzmacha B'Prozdor, let's prepare today. Shetikones Letraklin. You know why we do mitzvos today? So that we can enter into the next world, and there we can really enjoy, we can really appreciate. When I was younger, I was taught the mashal, the story of the chicken schmaltz. I don't know how many of you, maybe I'm dating myself to a certain era, how many of you in camp, when you were younger, if you went to a Jewish camp or a Jewish school, a day school, were you taught the story of the chicken schmaltz? Today, you can't tell the story, A, because no one knows what chicken schmaltz is, and B, because of the caloric level of chicken schmaltz is not politically correct. But I will tell the story nonetheless, because we come from a different time when you can tell stories about chicken schmaltz. The story, this famous parable goes of a couple, a family, they're living in some zhmozhe grodzhe zhrozh, some loch in Europe somewhere, where they're living in abject poverty, in total misery, nebuch, and the husband can't barely eke out a living, he's rubbing two nickels together, can't make it work for the wife and the children, they're hungry, nebuch. And he hears that far away, there's a place called the Isle of Riches. There's an island where on this island there are rubies and diamonds and emeralds just scattered all over, and there are coins, gold and silver, just to be had at the taking. So he says one night to his wife, they're sitting drinking tea in their little hovel. He says, you know, I think it's time I try to set out and find the Island of Riches and go get some money. We can live like mentioned. We can't do this anymore. She says, fine, Beseder. How long do you think it'll take? He says, well, I was talking to people in the mikveh Erev Shabbos. You know, we were schmoozing, and I heard that it takes about a year to get there. By the time you go by foot and by tram and by horse and by buggy, and the whole story takes a whole year to get there. And I'll stay there for, you know, a couple months. I'll collect, and then I'll come back. So I'll be back in a couple of years. She says, Beseder, how am I going to live until then? All right, we'll figure it out, whatever. So the husband leaves. It takes him 12 months. He goes by buggy, by horse, by cart, by everything. Finally, he gets on the ship. He pays the fare. The ship arrives close to the edge. He could see off the edge of the ship. He could see the Island of Riches. And they lower the gangway. He jumps down the plank. He runs down. And he's so overwhelmed. He's shocked. People are walking around. They're not paying attention to the fact that on the floor, There are literally diamonds just lying all over the place. All up and down the pathways, it's lined with coins. Not just nickels and dimes, but expensive thousands and thousands of rubles. He has a fishing jacket on. That's the only jacket he took with him for this whole journey, with a lot of pockets. So he puts a few things in his pockets and he starts stuffing it in there. And he's like mamish overwhelmed. And he starts walking around the island and he sees everybody has, you know, businesses and things, and they're busy running, they're doing, they're going, they're whatever. And he turns to one guy. He starts trying to strike up a conversation and he says, "Where's the marketplace?" The guy figures, "I'm going to go to the marketplace. I'm going to set up a little shop. I'm going to make a killing. It's going to be amazing. Just work a couple months." So he ends up in the marketplace, and there are stalls and people yelling and hawking and selling and all kinds of things. So he starts looking around. And he starts noticing little bags that are being exchanged, passing back and forth. What's going on? Turns out they look and they say, "You don't know what's going on over here. You know, the greatest commodity on this island is chicken schmaltz." Guy says, "Chicken schmaltz? Where I come from, chicken schmaltz. Everybody has chicken schmaltz. Even we have chicken schmaltz," he says, "in our shtetl." They say, "Yeah, but over here it's hard to get chicken schmaltz. We need it for baking. We need it for cooking. We need it for fuel. That's the commodities." The guy says, "Okay, chicken schmaltz. I can deal with that." So he sets up a little store and he starts doing business with Kitzar Mice. He stays there for 3 months and he becomes a mega entrepreneur. He has an entire refrigerated container of chicken schmaltz. After 3-4 months, he realizes he's got to get home. So he's very wealthy. So he pays a local guy. He says, "You're going to be the hauler of all the chicken schmaltz. You're going to take it home." No problem. The guy says, he pays him a fortune of money. He gets on the boat. He heads back. He's got the container ship behind him with the chicken schmaltz. He gets back on land by boat, by sea. This time it takes him a little shorter because he's very wealthy, so he can pay somebody to take him on a train. He comes back to his neighborhood. He arrives back in the little shtetl. He sent them a postcard to let him know when he's approximately going to arrive. They're standing outside looking. The wife is looking. The children are looking. They mamish look starved. Starved! They've been waiting for years. The guy comes home, he gives his wife a big hug, he says, "Honey, I missed you so much, I love you, the children," big hugs, big kisses. She says, "Did you make it to the Isle of Riches?" He says, "Yeah, I made it big. You won't even believe it. You won't believe it. Just you wait, 10 minutes, there's a guy coming." She says, "A guy coming?" He says, "Oh yes, I hired a Traeger. I hired a porter to bring all of the riches." 10 minutes later, they're making a chagiga. The guy pulls up with a huge container. She says, "Wow, amazing. Yankel, you did it." He says, "Yeah, you got to see what's in here. 74 gallons of pure chicken schmaltz." And the wife looks at him like sideways, like, "Yankel, du bist am Schigene gewarn. You lost your mind? Are you totally insane? Where did you go?" He says, "Don't you understand? I was the biggest entrepreneur on the Isle of Riches. I had 74 gallons of chicken schmaltz." He's screaming. And she looks at him and he looks at her. And there's dead silence. Utter dead silence. And he starts to realize, "Oh my gosh. I went to the Isle of Riches. I went to the Island of Riches. And I came back with chicken schmaltz. That's why I went to the Island of Riches, for chicken schmaltz? What happened to me? I got so distracted. I got so lost that all of a sudden I was thinking about chicken schmaltz instead." And he starts realizing, where does he have any riches? So finally he looks Epis in his pockets, in the same fishing jacket he wore when he went there. He found a few diamonds, a few rubles. But he sits on the side and his wife's looking at him like he's a madman, and he starts crying. He's like, "I got so far tumult. I got so confused." So when we were kids, that's what they used to explain to us, that our neshama comes down into this world and the neshama is like, "We're here for mitzvah. Sign me up for Masim Tovim, for Chesed, for Tehillim, for being a good friend to somebody, for bringing out the light of the Ribbono Shel Olam." And what do we end up with? Chicken schmaltz. We end up worrying all day about stupidity, about narishkeit, about chayisha, about food and all kinds of other smallness. which is a very powerful story. And it's very important to keep this in mind. And it's true. And this model of Yiddishkeit, this is what Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi tells in the Gemara in Erevin. May dechsev asher anochim et savcha hayom. Hayom la'asosam. Today to do the mitzvahs. Hayom la'asosam. V'lo l'marcha la'asosam. In the next world, there are no more mitzvos. Hayom la'asosam. Today, we do the mitzvahs today. U'lamachar l'kabel scharam. We get the reward tomorrow. The Vilna Gaon, the great genius of Vilna, when he was on his deathbed, his Talmidim saw that he was weeping. And they said to him, "Hey, look, Rebbe, you've learned so much Torah, you've accomplished everything. Why are you crying?" He said, he held up his tzitzis, he said, "Because in this world, for 4 rubles, I could do the mitzvah of tzitzis, and where I'm going, there are no more mitzvahs, there are no more tzitzis." It's a beautiful model. We do mitzvahs today because through the mitzvahs that we do, we earn Olam Haba. And in that light, it makes a lot of sense why Chazal emphasize the notion of incentives. Because doing these mitzvahs, they earn us our keep in Olam Haba. When I was younger, now there are new iterations of this. But I don't know how many of you remember there used to be Nintendo and Game Boy and all these games around one big game, Super Mario Brothers. Super Mario. Show of hands, how many of you are familiar with this inyan of Super Mario Brothers? Yes, we got a few hands. A few, Baruch Hashem. So what's the whole story with the Super Mario Brothers? You get this cartoon guy, and he runs around the board, and he jumps up, and he bangs into a brick or something, a square, and he earns a coin. And you go through the whole game earning lots of coins. And in this light, this is what, in a certain sense, what Yiddishkeit is about. It's like a Super Mario Brothers game. We're earning lots of coins in this world for the next world. And therefore, what we need to do is we need to incentivize you to earn all those coins. And therefore, the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Tshuva that there is an important principle called Shelo Lishma. Not for the right reason, but you do it anyway, because it's good. Kol osik b'Torah, anybody who studies Torah, kedei lekabel schar, or to receive reward. Kedei shelo tagia olav puranius, that God forbid, we shouldn't suffer, lo aleinu. Har is the osik shelo lishma. That is engaging in Yiddishkeit, shelo lishma, not for its own sake. But if you do this life of Yiddishkeit, not because you fear God, not to receive reward, but because we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu and that's what He commanded us, that's called Osik Lishma. So, what do you think? Should we recommend that people observe Yiddishkeit Shelo Lishma to get reward? Lefichach, the Rambam says, quotes in the Gemara, Va'amru Chachamim, La'olam, always, Yasok Adam B'Torah, a person should study Torah, Vafilu shelo lishma. You see it here on source number 7 where the cursor is. Even if it's shelo lishma. Shemitoch shelo lishma, bal lishma. Because if we habituate to doing it, in a way, even if it's shelo lishma, not for the most sublime, noble reasons, ultimately we'll get around to doing it for the good reasons. So a lot of times, this is what we do. We incentivize ourselves, and we incentivize our kids. Because as long as at the end of the day, we're collecting those coins, we show up to Olam Haba with a bag full of riches, that's the ultimate goal, which is true. And it's beautiful. And so we're going to do whatever it takes. That's why on the Seder night, which is the night of Chinuch, you know what we're very into? We're into incentives. The Rambam says you give out nuts. Don't give out nuts today because we're not allergic. Don't listen to this Rambam. You have to find some other Rambam. You have to give out candy. But if you don't like candy, if you're anti-candy, you shouldn't give out candy. Find something, for goodness sakes. Find something to get the kids excited about. Prizes, games. Let's get everybody excited. And this is really one of the most basic approaches to chinuch and to our own Yiddishkeit. And the Rambam articulates this in a very powerful way in his commentary to the Mishnah in Sanhedrin in Perek Chelek, where he describes the gradual education that we provide. So first thing we do is, I have it here on the screen, if you have it in the Maror Makomos, it's the number 8. I'm just going to read the bold, because the Rambam describes a succession. We tell the child, kra, learn, read, come to shul, dress in a way which is appropriate, respect your elders, do all the mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim, ve'etin lecha egozim, learn shnai mikra, and we're going to give you candy, o te'enim, or figs, ve'etin lecha ma'at dvash, and I'll give you a little bit of honey. And obviously things have changed. The Rambam, you know the Rambam, he lived, easiest way to remember it, is the Rambam lived just less than a half hour. The Rambam lived from 1135 till 1204. So the Rambam lived, 800-900 years ago. So maybe at that time, if you gave kids figs, it would get them excited. I can tell you, as a parent, Baruch Hashem, Halavai, everybody should be zocha to children or grandchildren or in the community that you can incentivize. I could tell you of our 5 kids, none of them asked for figs for presents. So we have to find something else. All right, so we're not going to use figs. But then the Rambam says they get older. You know what we do? We say, V'omalo malamdo, his Rebbe tells him, Kra, learn Torah, ve'ekach lecha min olam yafim. I'll give you nice shoes. We'll incentivize you with begadim chamudim. We tell the little girl, we're going to buy you a hair thingy. We have one of our children is a girl. So it's a whole story dealing with girls. I'm not knowledgeable about this whole inyan. There's shoes and there's stockings and there's knee socks and high socks and low socks and all kinds of things. The Rambam says, we're going to tell the girls, we're going to buy them beautiful clothes. That's the next thing. Then the Rambam says, we're going to go further. Etin lecha dinar echad o shnei dinarin. I'm going to give you one or two gold coins. One of the things that we started in recent years was a little incentive program in our house for Shnai Mikra, where some of our kids, we open an investment account for them, and we give them a certain number of cents for every pasuk of Shnai Mikra that they do. I spoke to Rav Weinberger Shlita, my Rebbe, about this and others, that the idea of incentivizing kids a small bit, it actually teaches them some financial marshmallow test that they can't, it's not money that they can spend, but they invest it. It teaches them one day, maybe they'll figure out how to be smart about money. But the idea that you give them money, you give them a few coins, the Rambam says, that's the next step. And then after coins, you know what? We tell them, lamod, learn, kedishitia rosh v'dayan, so you could be a chosh of a guy, everybody could stand up for you, v'yakimu panecha. Then the Rambam tells you what he really thinks. V'chol zeh meguna. All of this, it's very distasteful. Amnam yitzarech limot, lamiyot seichel adam, shiyasam tachlis ha-chachma, davar achar zulasi chachma. But we need to incentivize people. This is what we might call the spoonful of sugar method. Again, from my childhood, some of you remember Julie Andrews, correct? That was Mary Poppins when we were growing up. Julie Andrews, yes. So she has a song with the little children, Michael and Jane. They don't want to eat their cod oil or whatever the codfish was, right? The medicine. So she has a whole niggin. Just a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down, right? So in a certain sense, this is what the Rambam is saying. We tell our kids, do all the mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim, and we'll give you a spoonful of sugar. But I think there's something dangerous about this. I think there's something we have to be careful about. This idea of gamifying, of making Yiddishkeit into something that's exciting and we incentivize it, it's something which is developed in this book, a very fascinating book that I've been studying with some groups this year called How to Change, The Science of Getting from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be by Katie Milkman. It's a fascinating book with a lot of interesting insights that overlap with Torah and Yiddishkeit. So she talks in there about getting people to be productive by gamifying. You have a business project that you want people to work on in your office, so you gamify it. So we incentivize it. But the problem with this mahalach, this third mahalach of Yiddishkeit, which doesn't just say, do it because, and it doesn't say, do it because it's going to be good for you because you're going to develop the marshmallow habits of healthy living. It says, do it because we want you to earn olam haba tomorrow. So to do that, you got to work today to earn for tomorrow. And we'll incentivize you today. We'll give you a spoonful of sugar. We'll give you, like the Rambam says, we'll give you candy, or we'll give you investment money for Shnai Mikra. We'll give you all these treats. We'll give you the spoonful of sugar. But there's a problem with this Malach too. And I think we see sometimes the downside of this, the challenge, which is what happens when the spoonful of sugar that we want to give a child or to give ourselves to motivate us is not as attractive as whatever bottle is on the outside in the other world. Yeah, maybe a spoonful of sugar works for a child in the 1950s in a Disney movie. But today, the allure of the outside society, the pleasures and the dangers of the world out there, the struggles, the emotional struggles of people are so strong. Just to tell them, today we're going to give you a little candy. Is that enough? Is that enough of a mahalach for people to say, I'm going to be committed to Yiddishkeit? Maybe it is. But maybe for some people, this too is not enough. We certainly can't just tell them, do it because God said so. We can't even just tell them, do it because it's good for us to learn this kind of lifestyle. And I don't think that ultimately, as we get older, we're adults now. We need to look at each other in the eye and say, is that really what it's all about? Is it about Super Mario game of life, of being miserable, but just so that we can collect coins, so that one day when we're old, after 120, we can cash the coins in? Is that what we're asking people to sign up for? Is that what we're signing up for? At some point, we might look ourselves in the mirror and say, why are we doing this? What are we doing? So maybe there's another mahalach. Another mahalach that says that the assumption is faulty. The assumption of the Mary Poppins spoonful of sugar is that we do things that we don't like that are cod oil so that we can get something that we do like. But what if we realize that the Yiddishkeit that we have is in itself the biggest bracha? It's not an easy thing to realize, but maybe that's what it is. And maybe the theory that we need to be promoting for ourselves, that we need to be celebrating in our community, that right here, right now, it's geschmack to be a Yid. There's no other thing that I'd rather do. There's no person that I'd rather be. There's no place that I'd rather go. Somebody told me this morning, today, Sunday morning, January 2nd, 2022, that I wasn't Jewish. So where would I go? What would I do? Well, if it's about drinking cod oil, so then maybe I would try to taste what's out there in the world, and then maybe I'd come back to it. But if maybe the deepest mahalach is that it's so geschmack to be a Jew because it gives us a life filled with meaning in the present, that we live the Ribono Shel Olam day in and day out, that we are touching just obliquely eternity in this world of finitude, and how beautiful it is to live in the presence of God in a meaningful life, and how geschmack it is. Maybe I would run to the mikveh right away. Be my first stop. I'd be on my way to Tui in 10 seconds. Jump right in that mikveh. Because it's so beautiful here and now to appreciate that. And not everybody sees it this way. The Egle Tal, the Heligas Sochet Shavar, has an introduction to his Sefer Egle Tal about the Lama Tes Malachos. He says, well, I'm telling you about the concept of Talmud Torah. Mi de dabri es zocher es kormash shamati knatz b'nei adam toim. I heard people say they are toim miderech haseichel. They stray from the way of intellect. Be'inyan lima Torah sakadosh and the learning. And they say, those people, the mistaken people, you know what they say? Ki halomed, a person who learns, u'mechadish chidushim, and comes up with novel insights. V'someach. And they enjoy it. Umis anig belimudo, and it's geschmack. Ein zen limud haTorah kol kach lishma. He says, yeah, you know what they say? That's not real learning lishma. Real learning is breaking your teeth and being miserable and wretched. That's what real learning is. Says the Egle Tal, how foolish, how wrong that is. Adarabba. Zeu ikar mitzvas limud Torah. The main thing about learning is leosas, is to be thrilled, v'sameach, and happy, u'misanig b'limudo. And then, v'oz divrei Torah nivlam b'damo. To enjoy it, to appreciate it, to feel happy about it, to be excited about it. That's the goal. Not that it's some kind of cod liver that we have to get past. That we should enjoy it. There's a relatively new sefer that's based on the teachings of Rav Itchemeyer Morgenstern. It's an anonymous sefer, but it's written by members of his chabura in Israel. It's called Bayom Darkecha. His svarim, Rav Itchemeyer's, are called Yam HaChachma. So this is called Yam Darkecha, Yitzchak Moshe, Bayom Darkecha. And what is the introduction of the sefer? The whole sefer is about our approach to Avodas Hashem today. It's really asking the question that we started with. This big why. Why are we doing what we do? What's the why behind it? The main focus, says the Sefer Bayom Darkecha, is Mavo HaSefer, what's the introduction? HaTainug Ba'avoda, the enjoyment of serving Hashem, of being a Jew. HaTorah Kedosha Mabal Adabra Al Inyan HaTainug Ba'avodas Hashem. The Torah speaks at length about the issue of enjoying serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Omeris, David HaMelech, says, Tamu Ureu Ki Tov Hashem. Taste and see it's good. Os Tisanagal Hashem. How beautiful Shabbos is. How much enjoyment there is. Not how wretched it is that I have to put away my cell phone for 25 hours, but how nice it is. How wonderful. V'tisaneg badesh nafshechem. We ask Hashem every day, help us feel that, help us taste it, help us appreciate it. We say, Vaharevno Hashem Elokeinu. Ki koach ha'anoa v'atainug, the power of enjoyment, Shashem Yisbarach nosam b'nefesh ha'adam, the God imprinted within our soul, hu davar ikari ma'od b'avodas Hashem, it is fundamental. V'zer rotzen Hashem Yisbarach, this is the will of God, she'yelonu simcha v'atainug, that we should enjoy me'hais yachtus imo, with being connected with Hashem, u'me'avodaso. V'rak kein itzura ha'avoda anachona, and that is the only way. If a person, God forbid, he says, V'im ein la'odam hana b'avodaso, if a person doesn't enjoy being a Jew, V'osu utom mitoch chiyuv b'lvad, he does it only because he's obligated, it's as if a person received a great gift, but he doesn't appreciate it. And not only is it a bizoyon to the person who gave it to them, but it's also not recognizing what it is. But it's more than that. It's more than that. It's essential to continuity. Umemela, look at the next paragraph here where the asterisk is, where the cursor is. Im chas v'shalom, if God forbid, ha'odam lo yizke l'tainug b'avodas Hashem, if a person doesn't really enjoy their being a Jew, zu sakana atzuma, it is a great danger. Ki oz, because then yiksha olav ma'od, it'll become burdensome and difficult l'iskabra l'yitzahara, to overcome the Yitzahara. Shemukar lo tanuge sheker, that the Yitzahara is drawn to and understands the highs, the dopamine highs of tanuge sheker. And he might, as if a first person who is very thirsty, he might drink from bitter waters. And therefore, he says, there is a special Yitzhahara. There are people who think that enjoying having a geschmack in Yiddishkeit, in life, in the world, is wrong. He says, but that's Yitzhahara. Avola emesi sha'adarabba avodas Hashem b'tzuras hamitis. The true way of serving Hashem, hirak imano v'tanug l'nefesh, is with a deep and meaningful enjoyment. It doesn't mean that every moment of Yiddishkeit is fun. There's a difference between fun and sameach and simcha and deep meaning and contentment and enjoyment and feeling connected to something transcendent and to something deep in this world that would keep us from falling into the illusory temporal pleasures that the Yetzirah is trying to trick us to get involved in. And so this sefer Bayom Darkecha, which is an anonymous work, but it's a collection of teachings that reflect an idea that I think is more important now in 2022 than ever before, although it's important in every generation, that when we come back to taking a step back, a moment like we are this morning, to take a deep breath, a fresh look at our Yiddishkeit, why is it that we're making Torah a priority? Why do we daven? Why do we do mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim? So maybe for some people it's the first malach. It's because God said so, and there's a measure of obedience. It's beautiful. Maybe it's because it's letov lach, because it trains us to live healthy, balanced, successful lives, like the marshmallow, like the mitzvah of orla. That's also true. Maybe it's because we're going to earn for ourselves a place in Olam Haba, a nitzchius, an eternal reward, which is also true. But maybe to the Yam Darkecha, the most compelling, important message that we need to be conveying today is that the reason we're choosing Judaism right now is because it's geschmack and enjoyable and meaningful for us right now. Not because of the spoonful of sugar, which we want to add. And in the context of everything, a spoonful of sugar is very sweet, and it's delicious, and it's at the Seder, and it's good for, especially for young children, and for the part of us which is still young and needs a little bit of that. But to realize and to think about and to explore what exactly that great gift of Yiddishkeit is. Lekach tov nasati lachem. In what way is it tov? How does it create tov in our lives? This presentation is really the starting point. It's the commencement. It's the jump-off point for a full lifelong journey of appreciating, of understanding what is that lekach tov. In what way does Yiddishkeit make our life geschmack? Ultimately, it's because it contains within it the tzavsa, the connection points to HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout our entire day and throughout our entire life. But it's really crucial that we remember this point, that the Yiddishkeit itself is supposed to be geschmack and wonderful. So when somebody asks us, why is it that we do all these interesting things? The answer is because it gives us the most pleasurable, meaningful, deep, and connected life that we could imagine in this world.